Randy Rustin on piano with Marrakesh Blues. It was one of his signature pieces that was released in 1968. And it's from the album African Rhythms. Weston died on September the 1st last year at the age of 92. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we have much to talk about following up on yesterday. And first of all, I think it would be helpful to do some to provide some context. According to Adam Schiff, who presided over the committee on, was it intelligence? I'm not sure. I can't remember now whether it was the Intelligence Committee or the Judiciary Committee, before which we had the statement or the testimony, back-to-back testimony before these two committees by Robert Mueller, who was the author of a 448-page report dealing with two central questions and other questions as well, but he was tasked with investigating whether foreign entities working in conjunction with the Trump campaign had worked to fix, there's no better word than that, to fix the elections of 2016. And further, he was charged with looking into whether Trump and others working at his command persuaded people working with the campaign to do unlawful things in order to give him an advantage at the polls, and whether, in fact, they engaged in covering up what they were doing in order to escape detection. So, a lot of wrangling, and suddenly we see intense and vigorous pace at trying to get under all of this. Having released the report, which generated a lot of reaction, but now, yesterday, the task was to further explain certain things that the two committees, the Committee on Intelligence and the Committee on Justice, the Justice Committee, wanting more information and explanation and wanting to make it very public that this was a serious effort. And it was nobody's guessing that the intention was to come as close as possible. This is what, this is not what Mueller had intended himself. He figured out, in fact, he made it plain when he submitted his report that his report would stand as his testimony in any event. But he had an opportunity to rethink that position because demands were made that he be available to expand on certain things and to explain certain things in this report. He relented and decided, yes, he will appear. So what they did was put these two committees looking into these separate clusters of things together, and it was an all-day affair. Now, we had an interesting explanation by Schiff as he opened the hearings. This is what he said.
And on behalf of my colleagues, I want to thank you, Special Counsel Mueller, for a lifetime of service to the country. Your report, for those who have taken the time to study it, is methodical and it is devastating, for it tells the story of a foreign adversary's sweeping and systematic intervention in a close U.S. presidential election. That should be enough to deserve the attention of every American, as you well point out. But your report tells another story as well. For the story of the 2016 election is also a story about disloyalty to country, about greed, and about lies. Your investigation determined that the Trump campaign, including Donald Trump himself, knew that a foreign power was intervening in our election and welcomed it, built Russian meddling into their strategy, and used it. Disloyalty to country. Those are strong words, but how else are we to describe a presidential campaign which did not inform the authorities of a foreign offer of dirt on their opponent, which did not publicly shun it or turn it away, but which instead invited it, encouraged it, and made full use of it? That disloyalty may not have been criminal, constrained by uncooperative witnesses, the destruction of documents, and the use of encrypted communications. Your team was not able to establish each of the elements of the crime of conspiracy beyond a reasonable doubt, so not a provable crime in any event. But I think maybe something worse. A crime is the violation of law written by Congress. But disloyalty to country violates the very oath of citizenship, our devotion to a core principle on which our nation was founded, that we, the people, and not some foreign power that wishes us ill, we decide who governs us. This is also a story about money, about greed and corruption, about the leadership of a campaign willing to compromise the nation's interest, not only to win, but to make money at the same time. About a campaign chairman indebted to pro-Russian interests who tried to use his position to clear his debts and make millions. About a national security advisor using his position to make money from still other foreign interests. And about a candidate trying to make more money than all of them put together through a real estate project that to him was worth a fortune, hundreds of millions of dollars, and the realization of a lifelong ambition, a Trump Tower in the heart of Moscow. A candidate who, in fact, viewed his whole campaign as the greatest infomercial in history. Donald Trump and his senior staff were not alone in their desire to use the election to make money. For Russia, too, there was a powerful financial motive. Putin wanted relief from U.S. economic sanctions imposed in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and over human rights violations. The secret Trump Tower meeting between the Russians and senior campaign officials was about sanctions. The secret conversations between Flynn and the Russian ambassador were about sanctions. Trump and his team wanted more money for themselves, and the Russians wanted more money for themselves and for their oligarchs. But the story doesn't end here either, for your report also tells a story about lies, lots of lies, lies about a gleaming tower in Moscow and lies about talks with the Kremlin, lies about the firing of FBI Director James Comey and lies about efforts to fire you, Director Mueller, and lies to cover it up. Lies about secret negotiations with the Russians over sanctions and lies about WikiLeaks. Lies about polling data and lies about hush money payments. Lies about meetings in the Seychelles to set up secret back channels and lies about a secret meeting in New York Trump Tower. Lies to the FBI, lies to your staff, and lies to this committee. Lies to obstruct an investigation into the most serious attack on our democracy by a foreign power in our history. That is where your report ends, Director Mueller, with a scheme to cover up, obstruct, and deceive every bit as systematic and pervasive as the Russian disinformation campaign itself, but far more pernicious since this rot came from within. Even now, after 448 pages and two volumes, the deception continues. The president and his acolytes say your report found no collusion, though your report explicitly declined to address that question, since collusion can involve both criminal and non-criminal conduct. Your report laid out multiple offers of Russian help to the Trump campaign, the campaign's acceptance of that help, and overt acts in furtherance of Russian help. To most Americans, that is the very definition of collusion, whether it is a crime or not. They say your report found no evidence of obstruction, though you outline numerous actions by the president intended to obstruct the investigation. They say the president has been fully exonerated, though you specifically declare you could not exonerate him. In fact, they say your whole investigation was nothing more than a witch hunt, that the Russians didn't interfere in our election, that it's all a terrible hoax. The real crime, they say, is not that the Russians intervened to help Donald Trump, but that the FBI had the temerity to investigate it when they did. But worst of all, worse than all the lies and the greed, is the disloyalty to country. For that too continues. When asked if the Russians intervene again, will you take their help, Mr. President? Why not? Was the essence of his answer. Everyone does it. No, Mr. President, they don't. Not in the America envisioned by Jefferson, Madison, and Hamilton. Not for those who believe in the idea that Lincoln labored until his dying day to preserve the idea animating our great national experiment, so unique then, so precious still, that our government is chosen by our people through our franchise and not by some hostile foreign power. This is what is at stake. Our next election, and the one after that, for generations to come, our democracy. This is why your work matters, Director Mueller. This is why our investigation matters, to bring these dangers to light.
Okay, so Adam Schiff lays out the big picture. But the big picture that he wants us to pay attention to is not really the big picture that we ought to pay attention to. And you can see from the very beginning how distorted this whole process was. And how in the end, and it was very subtle, it did not look so overt, but Mueller put them all in a bind because he stuck to his original point, which was, my job is not to prosecute. That was not why I was placed in charge of this investigation. I was given this task to simply, pull things apart, pull the threads apart, and tell you what I found. Not what you told me to go and look for, but on my own, because he was a former head of the FBI, he's used to investigating things. His job, when he was given the assignment, is simply to report what he discovered, what he found. And that's what he did. He didn't go to this process to be biased. At least this is what Mueller insists. I was simply charged with reporting significant facts, not whether they would be helpful to Democrats or helpful to Republicans, but just helpful in understanding the various issues blues under this umbrella. That's it. He did not move one inch away from that in his all-day testimony yesterday, and that's exactly what the Democrats were hoping. It was also what the Republicans were hoping, that he would have the common sense to be a kind of flack. He didn't do that. His job was very strictly defined: investigate these allegations and come back to us and tell us what you found. He didn't change anything. Everything he testified to yesterday was contained in the report that he handed in since late March, early April. But you see, you see how the both sides, Republicans and Democrats, but especially the Democrats, were hoping that this would turn the political game in their favor. And they thought that, okay, if we honor what Mueller says, which essentially was, leave me alone. I gave you a report. If you want further explanations of certain things that are in the report, I'm happy to oblige. But you will not get any new information, and I'm not here to serve as anybody's flack. I'm here to report on the report. He didn't change his attitude and his stance. He remained strictly within the confines that he had delineated much earlier on. Now, what is curious is how desperate both sides are becoming, but the Republicans showed how, the Democrats showed how desperate they are becoming. Because Schiff, in his powerful position and in his introduction, was hinting that the report would deliver facts not already known, and that would put the Democrats in an advantageous position. But the leader of the Democrats, Nancy Pelosi, had said months ago that she is not in favor of taking any action against Trump. She was not in favor of that at all. And she was instead in favor of having the process proceed as it would ordinarily proceed. Schiff tried to to take a shortcut, and he was trying to get Mueller to do the job of adding more, of making the report and the facts in the report more compelling. And he did not do that. This is what was so upsetting to the Democrats. He didn't do that. And he also did not give the Republicans any reason to hope that he would play the game and be useful to them in covering up for them. He didn't do that. So we had both sides of the political aisle being very dissatisfied yesterday. But I must say, of the two parties, the Democrats looked particularly sorry and unprepared for what happened. I talked yesterday about some of the things that bothered me immediately. You know, the fact that they would cram these two committee hearings together. You can see the physical effect it was having on Mueller. He looked tired and beat and worn and depleted of energy. He looked old under the pressure of these back-to-back hearings. But you listen to the ideals that are planted into our heads when Schiff says that this isn't just about your basic crime, although it's a crime of high crimes and misdemeanors, crimes of a president, allegedly, but that this was a battle for the very soul of America, the very precepts upon which democracy is based and shaped. He went all high-minded, but this was a scrap. This was a scrapper of a fight. This wasn't, you know, high-minded people with high principles. And no, it wasn't anything like that. These are people, especially for the Trump campaign people, fighting tooth and nail in very unorthodox ways to retain the presidency. And just as committed are the Democrats trying to tear that whole plan down. Well, as you look at it, and the reason I wanted to discuss this is that we often have a pie in the sky. Excuse me, we have a distorted view of how people at that stage actually function. And their whole thing is that power by every means necessary, they will take it, however they can take it. Whether they break the laws or whether they obey the laws, it's just immaterial. They have a plan. And it was clear that the Democrats still have no plan other than Pelosi saying, I'm not in favor of basically going after Trump. I'm not in favor of that. And everybody is towing the line. They don't like it, but they're towing the line. The first person really to introduce the idea of beginning to prepare for congressional hearings was Congressman Al Green from Texas. You may recall way back when he put forward his planks in his complaint that he was drafting, I noted that nobody stood with him. He didn't get a handshake. He didn't get a congratulatory signal from either, none of his fellow Democrats. But now we see that people are literally taking both the letter and spirit of what he first introduced and packing things onto it to make it theirs. To say that I too, I'm in this, but I'm in this as a leader. I'm not following Al Green. Democrats are absolutely in disarray. They're in disarray. And for all kinds of reasons for which they should be publicly criticized. It was clear back then that the suggestion by an African American that the direction that the party needed to go was to consider taking action against the president. they just let it die. The motion died right after he delivered it. And then Pelosi, who has reaffirmed her authority, she is the leader of the party. That's what she insists on people recognizing that. She is the leader of the party. You do as I say. And what she's saying is, we will not move against Donald Trump on the basis of trying to bring him to trial. We're not going that route. It is too devastating to the country, she says. It is too much of an impact on the citizens of the country, too great a burden, an emotional burden for them to bear. And we will simply follow the map laid out for us on how to take the president out of office. And that is laid out in the law. We will follow the law. In other words, what she's saying is, she has a sure thing going right now. She understands that if there is any chance that this movement will gain traction, she will lose everything. What she has now is power over the entire party. And she will keep that and squash any attempt to take action against Donald Trump outside of the prescribed order. She's not willing to take that chance. So it's everybody playing games and making it appear, or trying to make it appear, that this is all in the interest of freedom and democracy and voting rights. Hogwash. Yesterday, it can be correctly said, the Democrats got a whipping yesterday. And it was by their own hand, by default. It's not that the Republicans were so brilliant. It is that the Democrats were so slow to think about what it is they were doing or attempting to do. And it showed that they are beginning to panic because, A, they don't have the groundswell of support they thought they had or that they had before, especially in communities of color. Number two is that they vastly underestimate Donald Trump. And they vastly underestimate what America has become. So that they're conducting two different kinds of wars here. Trump needs to revive this racist element in order to stay safe. And he's doing a great job. And they are aggressive. They're reaching into the hinterlands and they're getting more and more people to identify with them. The Democrats are finally realizing they've taken this business of, well, we've got all our support. We've got the liberals, we've got the blacks, we've got the Latinos, we've got the women, we've got these special interests, and they're in our pocket. But the answer is no. All of the statistics are suggesting that there has been a dramatic change in attitudes. And people are voting not on the basis of what Schiff is talking about in his opening statement, about these high-minded ideals. Nobody is concerned with ideals. Not even the President of the United States is operating on the basis of high-minded ideals. They are in the mud. They are in the swill. And they've become accustomed to it, and they've adapted to it. Because this is the new axis of power. It doesn't look anything like it looked before. And this is what Trump is building on. Every now and then we see evidence of it when they hold these rallies and so forth. But let me tell you, they have reached into the different pockets that you never would have thought that people of this type, of this ilk, would so closely identify with Trump. The wealthy, the middle class, the working class, they're working hard at developing what they see as their base. The Democrats are talking, but they're not organizing. They think they could win this war by preaching to people, by talking about their philosophy and all of that. It's not working either. People in politics, and that's the history of politics, you have to reach them where they are and with a message that they're longing to hear and conveying to them the capacity to make it real. That's it. Calling these hearings and putting them together and going through this ceremony, which was useless, it backfired even within the party. It backfired. And you could see it. Schiff's message is not the message of the Democratic Party anymore. If you compare the message of Adam Schiff as he opened up the hearing with the message of the four women targeted by Trump, they're talking two different languages within the Democratic Party. And the old guard has already, in many ways, been discarded, sidelined, set aside in favor of a new way of doing politics. But, of course, it's all public relations as well. And the Democratic Party is desperately trying now to put together something of a relevant profile, relevant to the voters they have identified, the groups of voters that they may want to go after, to pursue. But they have no message relevant to these groups. But they got, don't mistake it, they got properly beaten yesterday by a most unsuspecting character named Mueller. Robert Mueller did the job. He made it look as if he was eager and willing to do something that he normally doesn't do. He normally doesn't explain himself. He normally doesn't explain the results of an investigation to the public. But it was his way of remaining above the fray and at the same time looking like the quintessential government official who is taking no sides. So he was the winner. Mueller was the winner yesterday, and in a close tie with Donald Trump. The clear losers yesterday were the Democratic Party. I don't know how they're going to fix it, but they have to fix it, and fast. We'll take a break here and come back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. We're looking to find out what you noticed, what you picked up in this arrangement where you have different groups vying for power, vying to hold on to it, how they are deploying their assets in the interest of capturing and keeping different kinds of constituencies. How did they achieve that? It was a very interesting way in which it was handled. But the way we will be looking at it is not the way most media organizations will look at it, or most people would look at it. Most people simply will function on autopilot. We'll do what the party tells us to do. But begin the process of analyzing things, disassembling things, and you come up with an entirely different picture. So 888-874-4888, and we'll come back right after this break. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Utrice Lead. And we're taking another look at what happened yesterday so that we appreciate all the dimensions of it and that we don't slip up and allow things to escape our attention. It was a very symbolic thing. It really was. Although, you know, most coverage will take the point of view, well, he said this, she said that, and Mueller said the other. Okay. But that's, anybody could discern things when you look at things literally. When you start digging deeper, you appreciate entirely different dimensions. I haven't heard any discussion, and that doesn't mean there weren't any. But I haven't heard any discussion about this particular angle of it. The fact that the Democrats were in, at least they appeared to be in disarray. They appeared not to have a cogent message. There appeared to be a lot of factionalism and infighting. It has to do with power and retaining power within the organization. The Trump administration is making full use of that. And here we have Robert Mueller, who does not intend to have his reputation stained by a bunch of people fighting each other over power. And in the end, he exercised the greatest power among all of these people yesterday and still escaped with his pride intact. And whatever future plans he has intact, it was very fascinating to see. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
I thought it was very interesting that of all the clips that you chose Swift. I thought that was an excellent choice in that he really... especially after the judiciary hearing, which was the first one, he seemed to be prepared to make some important points and not to lay it at Mueller's feet, as it were. But it's really a sad situation in many ways because, like you say, the Democrats are in disarray. They don't know where to turn. you know, they're not used to dealing with the overt racism and xenophobia and chaos and all that. So they don't know what to do at this point. And those of us who are watching it, we're just sort of shaking our heads over here. And it would seem to me that in order for them to get themselves together and to get coordinated, they really need to start an impeachment inquiry, because the subpoenas, the other witnesses they want, that's not going to be going anywhere. And they'll get, you know, it will heighten their priority to get subpoenas responded to and to make a cogent case. Because right now, Eutrice, it's a little bit of this and a little bit of that and not going anywhere that seems to be uplifting and positive.
But let's move beyond the Democrats and the Republicans. What other possibilities are there right now in terms of political power?
Well, I think what they need to do is they need to define terms. And it's just amazing to me that they're not, after the attacks on the four women, they should have had an organized press conference with the women. I mean, not having them stand up there by themselves, that just made no sense.
But don't forget, I mean, that could have been a liability to the women. That could have been a liability to the women. They're fiercely independent. True, they are, for practical purposes, allied with the Democratic Party. But you can tell that some of the philosophies that they have differ markedly with the Democratic Party. So I was hinting at something other than the formulation that we have now, the Democrats versus the Republicans. Is there some other configuration that could seize the moment and begin to build something based on the fact that both parties have lost their way?
Oh, that's true. And I think that the messaging, they're just seeming to ignore the messaging. So that means that Trump and the Republicans seem to get the last word. So they need to come out and they need to explain that none of the Democrats are socialists. In other words, having government own the means of production. They just want to have a strong safety, a social safety net, bargaining for workers, and protecting the public against corporate malfeasance. You know, they never seem to define terms or to let people understand just where they're coming from.
All right. Well, you got to start it today, and I thank you for that. I'm looking for a particular answer, and let's see if anybody gets it today. Maat puts us right at the beginning of the idea. It isn't impossible that things could change or be changed with directed action, but what would it be? What would it take? We've seen the configuration. We acknowledge it isn't working, or it isn't working as well as it should. We clearly can't live with the Trump side of things. That is annihilation. But what could a possible political alternative be, considering that we are literally at the cusp of the presidential election? We are at the cusp of a presidential election. This is 2019, and it's next year. What is a tactic you think that might be employed to achieve some kind of groundswell of power for people who've been locked out, to use the unwillingness of the Democrats to reach out, the confusion and the messaging? You're right on point with that. And we have the upswing on the Republican side, which many people who would more closely identify with the Democratic Party are feel that it's intolerable to even think of allying or signing up or joining the umbrella of the Republican Party right now with the philosophies that we see following. So do you have any ideas? As a pragmatist, as a person who sees the lay of the land, you're understanding it more and more, what do you think would be a very appropriate way to respond to the moment? Any ideas? 888-874-4888. You're thinkers. I thought you'd get this right off the bat, that you would see an opportunity here to create something different and to move in a different direction, or maybe not, but with different tactics. Do you see any possibility of bypassing this Gordian knot that we have in front of us right now? Anything? Any ideas? I don't want to put those ideas out. I want them to come from you. What do you think, even in the situation that we're in? It doesn't look good, but we still have an interest in surviving politically. So what is the answer? Or what is an answer, a doable answer, with the time that we have left before the next election? Is it possible that things could be turned around? And if so, what things could be turned around? And how do they get turned around? Your thoughts. All right. I don't see the lights. I don't see the lights. It means that people aren't willing to share their thoughts, or maybe you have no thoughts at the moment. But of course you do. Of course you do. And that's what we have to develop in ourselves, the capacity to think. And to think off the beaten path, to think smartly, to think in ways that we know others will not think. And we are, just to remind you, we're fighting for our survival. So in survival mode, based on what we are seeing, the trends that we are seeing, the way things are moving, based on survival mode, what alternatives do you think we can try and see if they might help us? I don't think we are disillusioned to think that we can score major victory. No, that's not going to happen. But we can have a very, very important impact. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, my beloved sister and family.
Hello, Willie.
Good afternoon. I just called to say hi and see how you're doing. And for the first time ever, I turned away from your programming. Because in my journey, not to be disrespectful, but for me, it is so idiotic. And I just want to say thank you for the programming that you've done this last week. They were so powerful. I send it to everybody in my contact, and I wish everybody else would download those programs and send it to their contact. As far as this is, we all already know that it's just one party. And, you know, I just don't waste my time with foolishness, you trees. I know you're trying to say, trying to show us and teach us something. But this, I'm beyond this. You know, this is like kindergarten stuff for us not to see and understand. That is, it's just one party. It's a game. It's a distraction. That's all this is. And the outcome, it's going to be the same. Because none of the president, that the so-called president that before him, is any different. That's all.
So are we destined to live with what we have and not try anything new?
No. What you have been saying is that we have to do what we have to survive. We have to prepare, find a way to survive and work on our own survival. That's what should concern us. Not what these people are doing, because this is just a distraction. That's all this is.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. Enjoy your day, sister.
Thank you, Willie. Thanks so much. Ed from Queens, what are your thoughts?
Hello, Utrecht. How you doing?
Okay. Thank you.
Being pragmatic, trying to build a third party, time to cultivate the fields for a new political movement. I'm not sure as to what direction. I know the squad, as they're called, could be a starting point. But to use the fact that, you know, Mueller presented at the hearing, he basically followed his task. He laid out the evidence and gave the Congress and the Senate the evidence that was there and the opportunity to indict this individual, but they don't want to go that route. So we're seeing that I've always been wanting to say the political system that exists needs to be destroyed, and this could be the beginning. You know, we might not get any marketable or viable results now, but the seeds can be set, the work can be done, and we can have some type of viable third party and hopefully a new political system comes out of this crisis. That's all.
Where would you start?
That's a good question. I mean, the Green Party is a mechanism there. As far as for nationally, I don't think it's going to be a real groundswell. It's going to have to start locally. It's going to have to be local movements. We're going to have to seriously take a look at gerrymandering and how local officials and local districts are set. Because what brought us to this situation, there was a lot of work done by people with definite motives, and things were set into motion 10 or 15, 20 years ago that manifested in the way the condition is now. So the work's got to be done. The political landscape's got to be analyzed. How to proceed, how to change districts, how to change representation, and to develop a new type of political philosophy that will uproot this one that still exists.
Well, I think you gave us a perfect answer. It has to be local. It's got to link into the philosophies that people have right now and the way that they interpret politics and the relevance of politics to their everyday lives. And it's got to organize a healthy alternative to the craziness that Willie explains it as distractions. We have to become very concentrated in our thinking. Thanks, Ed. You get the lollipop for the day. And that brings us to the end of our program today. It's important that we don't give up on thinking of new ideas and looking at the situation that we're in very clinically and very critically. And we will see that it isn't necessarily as bad, I mean, as totally defeating as it appears to be with regard to wanting something different and creating something new. But we do have to stop for a moment and think. So we'll see each other again tomorrow for Free Your Mind Friday, and we can continue this discussion, your views on it, then. Bye-bye.